You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Underdog Podcast from SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty.
Welcome to another edition of the Conference USA Underdog Podcast on UnderdogDynasty.com, SB Nation's home for G5 football, but I'm assuming you already knew that if you're still with us at this point in the season, it being week 12 going on week 13. Joe Londrigan and Eric Henry back with you once again to talk about a weird week in CUSA as the balance of power might be shifting a little bit, especially given what happened in Friday night's game, but we'll get to that in a second. Eric, how are you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing all right, man. Cannot complain. The weather has finally turned here. We've had a couple of temps in the 50s, and, you know, it's kind of like as the world turns here with Conference USA, you know, right when you think you have things figured out, throw another curveball at you, and we'll see what we got, so.
So it's, you know what? You hit the nail on the head. Conference USA football is a metaphor for life. Right when you think you have it figured out, it throws a curveball at you, and you got to just start from the ground up once again. So that's kind of where we're at right now. And I guess without further ado, let's jump into some Week 12 results. And of course, on Friday night, we had Marshall taking down Louisiana Tech 31-10. Big part of this result, no Jamar Smith and no Adrian Hardy for Louisiana Tech. Those two guys get suspended for a couple of games for a violation of team rules. Exact violation was undisclosed. Have to assume it's somewhat serious, though, if they're going to self-impose a suspension of two of their best players, especially with the conference title race coming down to the last couple of weeks here. But arguably Tech's most disappointing performance of the season with just 261 yards on offense, regardless of who's under center. On the Marshall side, though, Isaiah Green and Brendan Knox get two touchdowns apiece. Their development continues to be a thing of beauty if you're a Marshall fan. And just like that, the Herd are tied with FAU for the lead in the East. So a pretty significant result on that side of things.
Yeah, you want to talk about a game that really plays a huge factor in not just the East, but the West as well. Let's start with Marshall. They get the victory, and you touched on Isaiah Green and Brendan Knox. I will touch on the return of one Obi Obiolo, you know, one of the better names in all of college football. He plays his first game of the year. It was thought that he was going to miss the entire season. He actually posted that on Twitter that he was expected to miss the entire season in a redshirt, but with the new four-game redshirt rule, that is not in jeopardy, and he can come back and help his team down the stretch. 8 grabs for a buck 46, no touchdowns, but was by far the game's leading receiver. And we've talked about it all year in terms of Isaiah Green and his consistency. Getting that number one target back will help tremendously. So that's huge for them. You know, and then from the Tech side, we talk about the suspensions. Aaron Allen goes ahead and gets the start, 19-32, a buck 59, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Can't expect too much out of a freshman quarterback who, you know, into midweek, because we found out about the suspension on Thursday. So until midweek, who knows, you know, how many reps he may or may not have gotten. It does seem to be something that came out of the blue, so I'm not sure how many reps he may have taken with the first team. So you lose arguably one of the top quarterback receiver tandems in Conference USA. Not enough there that, you know, Tech's offense can rely on Justin Henderson alone, because his success this year was really predicated on that tandem of Jamar Smith, Adrian Hardy, Smoke Harris, guys like that, to open up things for the run game. So, you know, all in all, it's a huge result, because now Tech is 8-2. That opens up things for Southern Miss and even a UAB, because Tech suffers their first conference loss. And then in the East, FAU fans on social media were not, you know, they were not pleased with the fact that Louisiana Tech went ahead and made those suspensions. They made their feelings pretty clear. Even Lane Kiffin, you know, tongue in cheek, he wasn't serious about Skip Holtz choosing to suspend his players, but even he said, you know, hey, I wasn't thrilled with it either, because we need Marshall to lose. But yeah, now it throws a huge monkey wrench into who you might see in the conference title game in a couple weeks.
You got to imagine that would be pretty funny, though, if the hate for FAU ran so deep amongst Louisiana Tech that they would sabotage themselves in such a way that they would jeopardize their own title chances just to put FAU's chances at risk.
It would be a hell of a conspiracy theory, one that I'm sure some people, you know, my neighbors about an hour north in Boca would subscribe to. But yeah, I'm not quite going there just yet.
Break out the cork board and the red yarn. I'm buying into it.
Okay. I was going to say, I think Coach Kiffin has got himself into enough hot water this year in terms of his conspiracy theory. So a conspiracy theory, I shouldn't say his. So I don't think he's going to be following that one.
If he listens to this, which he obviously will, I bet he said challenge accepted. So something to pay attention to in all seriousness. As the title races get even tighter, we got FAU and Marshall neck and neck in the East, and Louisiana Tech still have a narrow, narrow lead in the West, but Southern Miss making a big run at it. And of course, you've got UAB sort of in the conversation as well. They beat UTEP 37-10 over the weekend. 353 rushing yards for the Blazers offense, led by quarterback Dylan Hopkins with 163. So that offense continuing to get it done. Defensively, still playing pretty solidly as well. Kind of a step backwards for UTEP in this one with some speed bumps, so to speak, against the best defense in the league still.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll start with UTEP. You know, Kyle Loxley had really put together a string of solid games. I don't want to say great, but it put together a string of solid games passing. Looks like, you know, he may have gotten injured. I didn't catch what the reason for his departure was. But Gavin Hardison came in, and I think it's interesting, Joe, that they did go with Gavin Hardison. Clearly, Dana Dimmel is sticking to the, you know, patience is key kind of theory there, because they do have, you know, Deion Hankins. They do have Mr. T.J. Godwin. But they're the highly rated recruit at quarterback. But Gavin Hardison comes in 16-37 for 222, one touchdown. But obviously, that's not going to get the job done, especially when the rushing game, 29 carries for 90 yards. I mean, you take away one long run of 26 yards, you're looking at, you know, quick math here, 28 carries for 66 yards. So obviously, that's not going to get the job done. But on the UAB side, you know, good job to see them bounce back. Dylan Hopkins, what he does add is the rushing dynamic. You know, he's definitely a true dual threat. And even Bill Clark said heading into next week's matchup against Southern Miss, yes, Tyler Johnson III should be back, but don't rule out that you will see some Dylan Hopkins because of the fact that he can run the football. And you're talking about a guy who had 163 yards on the ground. And that's just, you know, to get that rushing game back for UAB is huge, because I talked about last week, you know, Spencer Brown isn't having the best year. He's been banged up. He did have 8 carries for 66 yards, but his year as a whole is way below the standard that he set for himself in his freshman and sophomore year. But all things considered, great win for UAB. You know, defensively, they show up, you know, led by guys like Garrett Moreno and Christopher Mole. So good to see that UAB defense get back into shape, and we'll see what happens next week, because if they do, you know, beat Louisiana Tech, excuse me, I think I said Southern Miss. If they beat Louisiana Tech next week, you know, Tech's going to have 2 conference losses. And UAB currently has 2 conference losses now, so they'll actually have a chance to move up into second place depending on the result of the Southern Miss game. So it's a huge game next week, but, you know, one step at a time, good win for UAB.
100%. And it's funny, going into last weekend, I just found myself, you know, saying internally, I wish there were more hours in the day. I wish I had more time to, you know, just to kind of embrace my hobbies or have hobbies even. And I was like, just, man, I wish I had more time to do that kind of stuff. But then also I found myself meticulously watching hours of UTEP football every weekend. So that's kind of on me at this point.
I would say as much, you know. I can't even throw a jab at you and be like, you know, hey, it's not like you're at the stadium like me, so I don't necessarily get a chance to watch the hours of UTEP football. But yeah, man, I mean, it just happens. Hey, you're committed to the brand, the CUSA way.
That's exactly. It's commitment to the brand and the lifestyle. No one question it. We'll stay in Texas then and talk about Rice, who beat MTSU for their first win of the season over the weekend, 31-28. Like I mentioned, first win for the Owls this year. They survive Asher O'Hara's comeback attempt. And it's a little bit of a return to the spotlight for Rice quarterback Tom Stewart with three touchdowns after not seeing significant minutes since the beginning of the season. And with this loss, MTSU, unfortunately for them, officially eliminated from contention for a bowl game.
As we talked about, it is the Asher O'Hara show when you talk about Middle Tennessee State's offense. You know, offensive coordinator Tony Franklin, he's not shy about it. Everything runs through O'Hara. 338, I want to say that's a career-high passing for him. In addition to the 19 carries for 65 yards, he's just inching closer to 1,000 yards rushing on the year. And Pro Football Focus actually has Asher ranked as their 35th top quarterback in America. So, you know, if my memory serves me correct, I want to say he's first or second right there at Mason Fine among CUSA quarterbacks. So Asher's having a great year. You know, guys like Ty Lee and Jalen Marshall both go over 100 yards, but they got off to a slow start. You know, if my memory serves me correct, Rice went up 17-0 to start this game, and then it became mode where it's like, hey, you know, we got to catch up. You're at home. Maybe you're sleepwalking against an 0-9 Rice team. And that just goes to show you, you know, there is a level of parity in this conference where, you know, you and I have talked about it off air and we talked about it on the air. You have your top three or four teams, right? And you kind of know they're in that cluster right there, and you can kind of flip-flop any of those guys. What this league doesn't necessarily have is a middle. I would think even the six and the 5-5 teams or the 6-4 teams, you know, if you don't show up on your best day, you can be beat by an MTSU or even a Rice, you know. It looks like there's only really one or two teams in conference, maybe like a UTEP, things of that nature, who you can kind of write off and say, hey, it's a true rebuild. So give credit to Mike Bloomgren and Rice's team. Tom Stewart, three touchdowns. Aston Walter, they get the running game going as well. Brett Rosner, three touchdown catches. So just a great performance overall. Brad Rosner. I think I said Brett Rosner. But a great performance overall for Rice. And they get the first one of the year. So we talked about, you know, the need for them to get one in the win column. No more moral victories, and they managed to do that.
Ironic that CUSA is a league with no middle, even though there is a team with middle literally in their name.
Ba-ba-ba.
That just blow your mind.
I don't think it probably didn't come through over the recording. I said, Papa, I'll give you the rim shot. You know, that's the, it didn't come through, Joe, but you know what? I was there with you, man. I was there with you. If in any way that you can make us look older than our actual age, just go right ahead.
If there's one thing that I have another degree in, it's dad jokes. So, you know what?
I was going to say, you hit the nail on the head right there.
I regret nothing.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We'll stay talking about CUSA West, though. We mentioned Southern Miss having a real legitimate shot at taking that side of the conference now and getting even closer with a win over UTSA this weekend, 36-17, the final score there. That offense just on full display once again with 493 yards total. Four different players got into the end zone for the Golden Eagles. On the UTSA side, though, better day for Lowell Narcisse, who gets 325 yards through the air on the day. So, you know, with your UTSA, you take the improvements that you can get. Obviously, they knew they were coming into a tough game against Southern Miss. And back on the Jay Hobson side, Jack Abraham, Kez Watkins continue to be damn near unstoppable at this point.
Yeah, you know, I'll start with UTSA. All right, you're 4-6, you got two left, right? So it seems like, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, Joe, that UTSA under Frank Wilson, it's kind of been this way every year, right? Where, you know, they start off slow and you're wondering, okay, what's going on. And then they hit the middle of the season where they kind of get a few victories, and they give you just enough hope to think that they might, you know, be able to kind of sneak in there, get a sixth win and get a bowl game. But then you look at the rest of their schedule, they have SAU and Louisiana Tech. And Louisiana Tech will have both Jamar Smith and Adrian Hardy back for that contest. So I don't think anyone's thinking that Frank Wilson's going to, you know, get to that sixth win and get to a bowl game, or at least get to bowl eligibility. Now, on the Southern Miss side, like you said, damn near unstoppable. In my opinion, it's the best wide receiver and quarterback duo in Conference USA, Jack Abraham and Quez Watkins. And let's, you know, we haven't talked about this name a lot on the podcast. Give credit to Buster Faulkner, because I wrote about this in my Three Things We Learned About in Conference USA article. He wasn't the first choice for Southern Miss offensive coordinator. You know, if you paid attention earlier in the year, or I guess in the offseason, you know that there was essentially an interview and a lot of talk about former Baylor coach Art Briles coming in there to be the offensive coordinator. Social media, you know, was set ablaze with that, and that essentially was shut down by the interim athletic director and school president, right? But then, you know, 2 weeks later, they hire Buster Faulkner from Arkansas State. And the major difference that he's made in Jack Abraham's play is Jack Abraham's always been accurate. Last year, he led FBS football, completing over 73% of his passes. This year, he's at 67%. But you look at the yards per attempt. This year, he's pushing the ball downfield. I believe it's 9.7 yards attempt as opposed to 7.5 last year. So clearly, he's able to maintain a certain level of accuracy while still pushing the ball downfield. And I think that's made a huge difference for this offense, because you're allowing the playmakers like Quez Watkins, you know, Jones, Jalen Adams, to make plays downfield. And it just, you know, really opened things up. So great job by Southern Miss overall. You know, they moved to 7-3. And with the Tech loss, they're right there to potentially – you know, represent the West in Conference USA title game.
It's certainly looking more and more likely. And like you mentioned, that game against Louisiana Tech looming very big on the schedule. Very excited for that, just as a casual observer even. With that, let's talk about Middle Tennessee State a little more for this this new middle section of the show that we've been trying to do more often. Rick Stockstill, his team, as we said, eliminated from a bowl game this year. If you are the Blue Raider head coach, you're 61 years old. You know, you got a pretty significant rebuild. You know, I'll say partially underway. Asher O'Hara, definitely a good thing to build around if you're that program. But, you know, at this point, A, if you're MTSU, do you have enough faith in him that he can continue to take the program in the right direction? Or if you're the coach, are you ready to kind of take a step back and do something else? I don't know. I feel like with everything that he's accomplished, I feel like I would be pretty content. But at the same time, like, I, you know, head coaches are a whole different breed. So I have a hard time believing that he's ready to take a step down as long as he's still physically able to do the job. But, you know, if you're MTSU, I feel like they have to at least be quietly having that conversation behind closed doors and wondering if, you know, he's still the guy they want leading the rebuild of this program, especially considering you have guys like Will Healy and Tyson Helton, younger faces, and, you know, I guess you can put Mike Bloomgren in that category too. These younger faces really leading these rebuilds of programs all throughout the league. So what do you think, Eric?
Yeah, so for those of you guys listening, you know, let's put this out there first. This isn't just a topic that, you know, kind of came out of thin air, because there was a lot of talk last year that it might be Rick Stockstill's last year, that he could ride out in the sunset with his son, you know, Brent Stockstill. Now, obviously, that wasn't the case. They had a great year, and he's back this year. Now, I'm going to take it in a different direction, because there's two ways of looking at it. Yes, there's the aspect of youth, right? You know, youth and energy and what that can do for a program. But I was really struck by what Butch Davis told me. And for those of you listening, you know that I cover FIU. So I spent a lot of time around Butch, and he's really changed my perception of age. Butch just had his 68th birthday 2 days ago. And, you know, you're around the guy and you wouldn't think he's a day over 35. You know, Butch Davis, when you see him out there in the scorching South Florida heat, he comes off the field, you know, drenched in sweat, and he's still fired up, ready to go. You know, I just think that what Butch said to me personally at CSA Media Days was that there's necessarily this rush to kind of usher out or to usher in younger coaches and to push out older ones based on this idea that maybe they cannot relate to younger players. And Butch said that, hey, people forget that I've been doing this. I've been relating to 18, 19-year-old kids for 35, 40 years. Like, I kind of know what I'm doing here as opposed to someone who might not be used to it. You know, it's not always a benefit to have someone who's younger. Now, in terms of Coach Stockstill and what he's done at Middle Tennessee State, you look at the record, 90-85, eight bowl games, you know, 2-6, but eight bowl games, two-time Coach of the Year, actually two-time Sun Belt Coach of the Year and one-time CUSA Coach of the Year, which was last year. I just think that, in my opinion, first off, if there's going to be a change, it's going to happen on his own terms. I don't think, you know, Middle Tennessee State is going to usher him out by any stretch of the imagination. But I think at 61 and having the key being a piece like Asher O'Hara, who clearly is a talented quarterback, and we talk about it on damn near every podcast, Joe, that this league, you know, you can't call it from year to year. You know, one year it's, you know, you think it's going to be Marshall, you think it's going to be Louisiana Tech, and the next year it could be, you know, FIU, and it could be a UTEP. So this league, I think it turns so much, and clearly he hasn't had an issue getting talented players to come to Middle Tennessee State. I think that while maybe there's a possibility he might want to walk away on his own and do other things, I just think that there's enough juice left in his tank. You know, I actually had a chance to talk to Coach Stockstill as well, and he's another one of those guys who just, you know, don't let the number on his birth certificate define who he is in terms of youth and energy. And I think he'll be back for next year and you know, maybe a few years after that. You know, I'm not sure what his contract status is. I don't have it in front of me. But if let's pretend Coach Stockstill has 3 or 4 years left on his deal, I can easily see them writing that out and then, you know, riding into the sunset.
I definitely think as long as it's up to him, I think he's going to continue to do this job. I think it's just a matter of what the school decides to do. And obviously, neither of us are part of those conversations. But as you mentioned, with 3 years left on the contract, I have to think they're going to let the guy ride off, especially with, you know, the success that he's brought to the program over the last few years. He's got a Coach of the Year honor in there, of course, or at least one in CUSA. I believe he had a couple in the Sun Belt as well in the early 2000s. But yeah, I think as long as, again, he's physically able, I think we're going to see Rick Stockstill in the coach's chair for the time being. Switching gears to something non-football related, but definitely humorous nonetheless, staying on the other side of the 100 miles of hate, Western Kentucky, their honor students. So this popped up on Instagram, and to be honest, we don't have 100% confirmation on this, but definitely worth talking about because it's so ridiculous. Originally posted by Barstool Western on their Instagram, still up as of this recording. I guess there's a notice going around getting posted on kids' dorms in Minton Hall. This is a PG show, so how do I put this?
You jumped down that hole, Joe, so I'm going to let you find a way to define it.
You said this was going to be the middle segment, so these kids enjoy some alone time in the shower, and the end product has done $7,000+ of damage to the plumbing. If you don't know what we mean by that at this point, then ask your health teacher. But I just thought that was ridiculous. And given this residence hall, Minton Hall, just a few years ago was an all female dorm. So I think it's funny how quickly you know this happens. So I thought that was pretty ridiculous. And I don't know, I guess kids, either that or people are just really happy with the progress Tyson Helton's made with the football program.
I'll say this, two things. One, that was a bit of sarcasm in the old Underdog Dynasty Slack chat when I said we found our middle section, but we're here and now, right? So we can't take it back. I'll say this, and I'm curious your thoughts, Joe. I'll say this. What's the most ridiculous thing that you look back at your college years and you just, it's mind-boggling, you know, something that actually happened? For me at UCF, and this is, oh God, I should have prefaced this. This is in no way, you know, representative of the university or whatever liability I may or may not have by saying this. This is just a student thing. But there would be times when you could go to, and actually, it's an off-campus apartment, so I think I'm safe in saying this, that we lived in. And it was an off-campus apartment, one of the earliest ones that had been built in the early 90s. And it was known for having a section of the apartment building that if you knocked into the walls, you would routinely find plastic bags filled with goodies. I think that's the safest way I'll say it. so I think that was like the most ridiculous thing, just on piggyback into this story, which is like college. Yeah, man. It's once you do that and as an adult in real life, it's just so ridiculous. But I guess in college, you just, you know, shake your head and say, yeah, it's college, whatever.
I have a far more innocent story from that period of my life. So we were on like a sports trip. This might have been senior year of high school, actually, but we were on like a sports trip at like a cabin type facility, and there were vents that, you know, the lid of it popped off, and the vent went into all the different rooms. And in the room we were staying in, you couldn't see into it, but there was you could clearly see the opening of the vent that went down into the guy's bathroom. So what I did, because I thought I was hilarious, was I took a chocolate cookie and tossed it into the vent so that it fell down through the vent into the shower. And then either someone saw it and didn't pick it up, which I don't blame them, or no one noticed it until the morning, at which point we got a talking to about the proper places to leave objects of such color. so that was, yeah. That's like I mentioned, far more innocent story on my part. I didn't know where the drugs were in college because no one told me, because I wasn't cool.
Joe, I wasn't talking about drugs. I said goodies. What are you talking about?
You're right. I should have known. With that, we'll go to week 13. Then we got Southern Miss and Western kicking the slate off on 3:30 Eastern, ESPN Plus. USM favored by 4. As much as I love the Hilltoppers, I got to go with my gut and say Southern Miss is going to take this one. Jack Abraham, Kez Watkins, probably going to light that secondary up, unfortunately.
I got a little more faith in Western than you do. I do have Southern Miss winning, but I think it's a 50-50 game. I just think for Western, you know, one of the things that they've been able to do all year is play solid defense with guys like Devin Key, Juwan Jones, and D'Angelo Malone, excuse me. So I think Western has a shot, especially with Ty Story's play has really kind of taken off in the past couple of weeks. But in the end, I think Southern Miss wins.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a close game. Keep it locked on that one. And then also, same time, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, we have Charlotte hosting Marshall. Marshall favored by 7 in this game. I feel like that's pretty fair. Another game I feel like it's going to be pretty close. Charlotte definitely coming along as a program, but Marshall, as we saw last week, Isaiah Green and Brendan Knox, really tough to stop when they're both on, and then you add Obiolo to that mix. It's pretty tough.
It's a great name, right? Obiolo. You know, you can't – sometimes if you trip over that one, you can't be mad at yourself. With this one, I think Marshall gets the victory. However, I do not want to underestimate this fact. Charlotte has a chance to get their 6th win, which would get them to bowl eligibility for the first time in program history. And they have a chance to do it at home. Now, next week, the week after this week, they'll finish up the year at Old Dominion. And with the way things are going, you would think they'll get the 6th there, right? But I think there's something to be said about Will Healy in his first year and the energy that he's infused in that program and that fan base, and the chance to do it at home. So with that being said, I do think Marshall wins, but do not be shocked if Charlotte comes out and, you know, fired up by all the energy and what they have a chance to accomplish, gets the win, an upset win at home.
You can catch that one on Stadium, by the way.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And also at 3:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Plus, UAB hosting Louisiana Tech. According to Vegas, the Blazers favored by 4.5. To my knowledge, Jamar Smith and Hardy, I believe, are still out of this game. So that that definitely makes things significantly more interesting. Because of that, I feel like UAB can definitely pull this off, but they're going to have another really good rushing day like they had last week against UTEP. Meanwhile, that passing game obviously still needs to come together with Dylan Hopkins at quarterback.
Yeah, you know, from what we're led to believe, you know, unless there's a late week development, that Adrian Hardy and Jamar Smith will miss the game. Now, you can say that will give, you know, Allen and the other players a chance to practice the entire week. But with that being said, I mean, you're just talking about a huge drop-off. I'm talking about Jamar Smith, who had started 38 consecutive games, so a veteran quarterback, one of the top receiving talents in Conference USA. And I just think that, yes, they'll get James Jackson back, but that's not enough facing UAB at home at Legion Field. So I think UAB gets the victory and makes things really interesting in Conference USA West.
Definitely. Like we mentioned, that Conference USA West race getting more and more exciting as the weeks tick down. Staying in the West, we have Rice hosting North Texas in a game with not as many implications. On the NFL Network, you can catch that game. The Mean Green favored by 5.5. I feel like the margin's going to be a little bigger than that, despite Rice's, you know, showing of how far they've come as a program last week. North Texas still has Mason Fine, and I figure he's, you know, he's not going to let his career go down with a losing record.
Yeah, well, you know, this one, it's interesting to see what happens for Rice, because they're coming off of, you know, getting their first victory. They're coming home, and you don't know necessarily as far as Mason Fine's status. With the concussion, you don't know what it is just yet. So it'll be interesting to see if he does play. If he does not play, I still think North Texas gets the victory because they just have a little more talent built up than Rice. However, once again, you know, you just can't rule out things. We had a glimpse of what the future could look for UNT without Mason Fine. And they have two young guys right there who, in Austin Oon, who just, you don't necessarily know how they're going to react. So I guess all things considered, I'm taking North Texas, but it really depends on what Mason Fine's status is going to be.
Yep. Should be, you know, if Fine can go, then it'll be a win for the Mean Green in my book, but we'll figure that out as the week goes on. And then meanwhile, we have UTEP and New Mexico State in Las Cruces, rivalry game for these two programs. New Mexico State favored by 7 points. I'm going to go with the Miners for the upset. Actually, I've been really happy with the progress they've made. I feel like they should throw Kyle Loxley back in at quarterback if that's an option. Just given the progress that I've seen him make personally, as a player this season. But yeah, if not, then could be interesting. But yeah, I'm going to go with the Miners. And I think that's the first time I've picked them this year.
I believe so, unless my memory serves me, you know, incorrectly there. But I'm going to go with UTEP as well. I just think that, you know, the offense has looked better in the past few weeks. And you're talking about a New Mexico State team that also, you know, they're 1-9. You know, they look at losses against Ole Miss, you know, by 38 points, losses to Liberty, losses to Fresno State, losses to San Diego State. So they're really struggling. I mean, they got their only win against Incarnate Word. And I just think, you know, for a Conference USA comparison, they don't have a significant, you know, talent gap over a UTEP. So despite the fact that the game will be on the road, I think UTEP can go in there and get the victory.
You can catch that one on Flow Football, 4 p.m. Eastern. And then at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, we have ESPN3 showing Middle Tennessee State against Old Dominion. Blue Raiders favored by 15.5, according to Vegas. Gotta go with MTSU. Figured they gotta have a little bit of a little bit of charge in their step after the disappointing result last weekend. Asher O'Hara still playing out of his mind. Old Dominion, really, you know, unable to figure things out offensively over the course of this season. Still a pretty strong defense, but yeah, you got to go with Rick Stockstill's team, and got to imagine they'll avenge last week's loss.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, there's two things I want to see is that the both quarterbacks, Hayden Wolf, you have a true freshman who's, you know, it's his show. You know, Bobby Wallace made no secret of that, that it's going to be his show. And Middle Tennessee State's pass defense hasn't necessarily been great. So we'll see if Hayden can get a chance to, you know, maybe put together his first, you know, 250 or 300 yard passing game. And then as for the other side with Middle Tennessee State, it's the 1,000-yard rush with Asher O'Hara. Quick math again here. He has 822 yards, so I believe that would make him 178 yards away, if my math is correct, from 1,000 on the year. Let's see how many he can pick up against Old Dominion. Really quick, I know we're just going to do a very quick sidebar here. Joe, if Middle Tennessee State's record was better, let's say 5-5, Asher O'Hara would have to be a Conference USA Offensive Player of the Year candidate, right?
He would have to be close. I mean, he's doing everything for his team so far. He's running, he's throwing, he's legitimately like the selling point for this program at this point. And anytime you have a guy doing that in a year where, you know, frankly, people kind of expected MTSU to be at this record at this point in the year, I would absolutely say he would be a candidate for CUSA Offensive Player of the Year had the team reached that record.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at his numbers here. You know, he's got 2,130 passing yards, 15 touchdowns, 7 picks, and then the 822 rushing yards. So there's a chance, an outside chance, he could end up with 1,000 rushing yards and 2,500 passing. So that's a really good year by any college quarterback standards. That aside, if I didn't, you know, I'm been rambling, so I don't remember if I made my selection, but I do think that Middle Tennessee State bounces back and gets a victory, you know, going against a true freshman quarterback in Hayden Wolf. ODU just has it's an uphill climb, and there's not really enough talent there to compete with Middle Tennessee State on offense. So MTSU gets the victory.
I think we're in agreement on that one. Then at 6 p.m. Eastern, as we move into the late afternoon on ESPN Plus, UTSA will host FAU with the Owls favored by 20 points. I feel like that's a pretty fair margin as well in this game. Lane Kiffin's squad playing really strong with Chris Robinson, a really strong candidate for Offensive Player of the Year. 2,637 yards and 18 touchdowns through the air. That's really something for the type of offense that they run. So I feel like FAU are a pretty safe and self-explanatory bet at this point.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Joe, because I was going to make the transition from a hypothetical Offensive Player of the Year candidate to one who actually has a legit candidacy in Chris Robinson, you know, talking about where he came from the offseason and really turned himself around to have a great year. 18 touchdowns to only 4 interceptions. That's been huge that he has not turned the football over this year. No reason to think that that'll, you know, begin to happen at UTSA. I think FAU rolls easily.
And heading to the state of Florida from San Antonio, we have another interconference rivalry, so to speak. FIU hosting Miami on CBS Sports Network, 7 p.m. Eastern. The Hurricanes favored by 19. You know, I think at the start of the year, I would have given FIU a little bit more of a fighting chance, but I think, you know, their offensive momentum has definitely stalled and not been where anybody, I think, would like it to be, especially given the chance for an upset over a P5 team. But I think Miami just have their, you know, their situation a little bit more figured out, and I think they will walk out of FIU Stadium with a win.
Yeah. You know, it's the quote-unquote home game for FIU, but it's the return to Marlins Park. Or I shouldn't say return to Marlins Park. It's the return to the site of the Orange Bowl is actually what it is, but it will be on the grounds of Marlins Park where the the Miami Marlins, always be the Florida Marlins to me, where they play baseball. You know, it is what it is as far as FIU season this year. You know, I'll be there to cover that game. The fact of the matter is this, you know, they're really banged up. James Morgan is banged up. Anthony Jones missed last week with his kick in the calf. He's expected to play, but we'll see, you know, how close to 100% he is. Across the offensive line, there's injuries as well. Maurice Alexander's hurt. So there's no reason to think that with Jaron Williams coming in, to, you know, throwing six touchdowns against NC State 2 weeks ago, And then, you know, guys like Shaq Quarterman and Gregory Rousseau on Miami's defense is one of the best in the nation. There's no reason to think that FIU will be able to get the upset. I think that Miami will get the victory. But just in a quick, you know, fun fact here, the last time that Butch Davis won a game, or the last game that he coached at that site, it was the year 2000. The number one song was Destiny's Child, Independent Women, off the soundtrack. Oh, now I'm forgetting the name of the movie. With Mike Myers. Why am I having a brain fart right here?
Austin Powers.
Anyhow, thank you. The Austin Powers soundtrack. And what was going on at the time in the state of Florida? It was a recount because we were having trouble electing a president between George W. Bush and Al Gore. So I just goes to show you how long it's been since old Coach Davis has coached a game on that ground. So I think that'll be a bit of nostalgia for him, but Miami will get the victory.
Certainly been a crazy 19 years for the state of Florida in that regard, but looking forward to that contest as well. With that, we will start wrapping up the show by saying thank you so much for listening. If you haven't already, please subscribe on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whatever it's called now, Spotify, Google Play. We're on those platforms as well. And you can follow us on Twitter at @JOEHIO_, @EricCHenry_, and of course at Underdog Dynasty. And like them on Facebook as well. And check out UnderdogDynasty.com every single day for more G5 football content. We would love to have you. Happy football watching, everybody. Talk to you next week.